This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
More blasted rhetoric from the Banana Republic for people who think capital punishment isn't going nearly far enough.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the Great Dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. It's all about manners this morning. The collective world of politics appears to have got its knickers in a twist about some thuggish morons who appear to have spent most of yesterday shouting abuse at various figures in Westminster they didn't agree with. Their behaviour has elicited lots of head-shaking and finger-wagging from the more civilised sides of the Brexit debate, but surely there's very clear rules of engagement when it comes to political discourse around the Palace of Westminster. If you want to behave like a football hooligan, then prepare to be treated like one by the police. The Independent Republic will be down there later on this week, no doubt. So you better stand by your beds, because we won't put up with that sort of behaviour one way or another. 0344 499 1000. First up, though, remember when Gatwick Airport was paralysed because of a drone? Remember when the authorities told us they couldn't shoot it down? Remember when they said it was next to impossible to construct a defence system, even though one was in use at a prison in the Channel Islands? Well, apparently, that was all wrong. How do we know? Because all of the things that they said they could not do are now going to happen. Gatwick and Heathrow airports are about to deploy all kinds of defence systems to stop it happening ever again. And if it was that easy, why didn't they do it before now? What's the story with all the other airports around the country? And by the way, will we ever find out if there was ever an actual drone? 0344 499 1000. Later on in the show, we'll be finding out why gardening could actually help you live longer and why women over 50 are being told they're too old to love. Disgraceful. 0344 499 1000. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
So you'll all remember the chaos just before Christmas. It was around about Wednesday to Friday of the week just before Christmas Eve on the Monday. Gatwick Airport was shut down for approximately 36 hours. We were told that there were a series of drones being flown mischievously by professional agitators, people who were trying to disrupt not least the airport traffic, but also perhaps the entire country, bring it to a standstill, paralysing the airwaves of this country. And we were told that the police could not shoot them down. We were told that the army couldn't do anything about it. We were told that there's absolutely no chance of putting up any kind of jamming device because that would affect the planes and everything else in the area. All sorts of excuses were made. We still don't know, actually, if there ever was a drone. We still don't know whether the police were right to say that actually they think they might have been chasing their own tails and shooting at their own drone. Which was also looking for the drone that may or may not have existed. The whole story is a complete and utter mess, and we're going to have to try and figure out what on earth is going on. We're told this morning, by the way, that now jamming devices are going to be brought into Heathrow and to Gatwick. My first question would be, well, that's all very well. What about all the other airports in the country? Let's go to Chris Phillips, a security specialist, managing director of IPPSO, IPSO, to tell us precisely where we are with this bizarre story. Chris, a very good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thanks very much indeed for joining us. I have to say, I'm very, very much flummoxed by this story. I always was flummoxed by it. I still don't really know what happened, and I still don't really understand why all the things that they're now saying they're going to do, they couldn't have done back in December.
Well, to be honest, right, this is a perfect example of where companies, organisations understand and are being told about risks, about things that can happen to them, and they put their they put them on the back burner because it costs too much money to solve the problem.
Yes.
And then, of course, when the problem actually exists, it actually costs 5,000 times more than the potential thing to solve it would have cost in the first place. So there have been, there are many companies out there that can do this stuff, that can alter, interfere with drones when they're being misused. But of course, the legislation's not there specifically to stop this drone use. I don't think it's going to be in the near future. And I think it does show that government is so far behind innovation. Innovation's coming in so quickly that laws aren't being made quick enough to deal with the threats that they pose.
Right, well, that's fine and dandy, and I understand that, you know, it's difficult to deal with technology sometimes when you are slightly behind the curve. However, why do they have to tell us a load of lies? Because don't forget, we were told in some quite vivid detail that drones had been spotted, sometimes up as high as the air traffic control tower, you know, flashing lights at the people inside the tower, taunting them seemingly, and then shooting off again, landing on the runway, taunting the authorities once more. Now, all of that now is in doubt, and nobody knows if it actually happened.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident there were drones there.
You
were quite right to say, actually, that the police in the area do use drones as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, they could have been misspotted because they hadn't had the systems in place to actually know exactly what's going on. And you're effectively, in those circumstances, working by people on the ground, looking up and seeing something going on. And, of course, a drone moves from one area to another area very quickly. So they could have been chasing their tails. They could have been looking at the police drone. I'm not privy to that information.
No.
But what I do know is if you don't have the kit to know what's going on, then you are working blind and airports will be closed. And I think you mentioned the fact how, you know, what a situation with the other airports.
Yeah.
It's the same as it was with Gatwick. So this could happen elsewhere. And listen, it's not only airports. You know, the one thing that we do with security is generally put in at ground level. So you put fences in to stop people climbing over them. But of course, a drone effectively with explosives on board or guns on board can just flip over those. And prisons have been learning this.
No, indeed.
For the last 10
well,
days.
One of the things that I've seen over the course of the last month or so is a guy who was, I think, a security specialist from Israel, who said that they've certainly experienced over there the use of drones for terrorism purposes, and they've been able to construct a kind of a almost like a Star Wars defense system, if you like, which stops the drones from coming anywhere where they could do any harm or do any danger. So clearly there are systems available that you can use and that you can protect yourself with, because it seems to me that all of these laws that are being brought in, which should have been brought in by Chris Grayling maybe a year or so ago, all they are is good for people who basically abide by the law. For example, you know, there's a no-fly zone which is going to be extended from one-third of a mile to an entire mile. All very well and good if you are actually law-abiding, but if you're not law-abiding, why would you bother with that?
Exactly, but you've got to remember that, you know, we're now looking at things that we knew about 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Drones can carry big objects. Amazon have been using them or thinking about using them to deliver parcels. Now, listen, where's the next stage going with this? Well, in Dubai, they're actually using, the police officers there are testing out motorbikes that they can fly drones, drone motorbikes that they can actually fly to the scene of incidents in. So, you know, people are going to be flying about in these things within a very short period of time. And we need to rethink a lot of our legislation, a lot of how we do things, and whether we actually want people to be able to fly over our defences and into secure sites. Because this is not just about airports. This is about critical national infrastructure. This is about delivering packages into places that we really don't want packages to be delivered into.
Yeah.
So, things are changing very quickly, and that really government need to get a handle on this because the products are out there. The Israelis build this products because they feel the threat. They are being threatened by this stuff in Bagra Air Base. You know, they felt the fear of devices like this coming in. So devices are there to protect against this, and they just haven't been deployed.
No, indeed. So, I mean, what's your best kind of summation of what may have happened back in December? Because, you know, again, we were told that whoever was involved in running this drone, be it one or several, was clearly doing it for nuisance value and or to disrupt. But there doesn't seem to be any evidence of that.
No, well, I think my guess is as good as yours with this, because it's mysteriously gone quiet, and that usually means that the whole thing's a bit of a farce. Clearly, there were drones up, of course, around that time, around that area, I'm sure a lot of people would have then been putting drones up just to see what was going on. Mm. We've got professional drone people, photographers using them, but we've now got these things that are being bought for kids, kids are just taking them out and flying them around, yeah. It's as simple as that. And if you don't have the equipment in place to actually work out what's going on, to deal with the threat, then you are working blind. And that's what was happening. And I don't think we'll ever find out, actually, what happened in Gatwick.
No. Which troubles me slightly, because I feel as though, as members of the public and people who use airports and people who travel around freely and have the right to know stuff, I think we do have the right to know exactly what happened. I mean, why can we not find out? Why can we not get somebody, whether it's an MP or somebody from the inside of the kind of security business, to just insist on the truth?
Well, I'm not sure anyone knows the truth. That's the whole point of this. There will definitely be situations where drones have been spotted, but whose drone? I mean, these things are small, tiny. If you haven't got the actual equipment to identify these things, then you won't know whether it's a police drone, or you won't know whether it's a suspicious one. And don't forget, we're not talking about just drones, because they're fairly reasonably small bits of kit, although some of them are big, quite big now. But generally, they're not going to actually bring a plane down. It might cause damage, but of course you can attach things to them. And if you attach an explosive into one of these things and then it hits a plane, you've got a whole different kettle of fish. So I don't think we'll ever find out exactly what went on. I think there was a lot of misinformation, only because they didn't know what was going on.
Yeah,
that's the situation.
Yeah, right. I just think they're too cheap, by the way, drones, because if so many people are getting their hands on them, maybe what we need to do is make them more expensive.
Yeah, well, we've got to do something. We've got to, these things are going to be used commercially. There's no doubt about that. Unless the government stops them, these things are going to be able to carry bigger and bigger payloads. As I said, we've already got drones that will carry people. People-sized drones, and why not go bigger? They can go bigger, and what we've got now is helicopters flying around with lots of people in them. Who's to say that at some stage in the future we won't all be flying around in drones and landing wherever we want to go?
It'll be like some scene from The Fifth Element.
Yeah, well, we're not that far away, and if you look at some of the forward-thinking people who, talk about pods that can be used on the road and then can be picked up and transported around. These things are, it's not that far away. It's, it's a generation perhaps away from being able to do that properly.
Yeah.
And we need to rethink how we're going to manage. And all these building of roads, maybe we won't need them because we'll be flying around in drones.
Yeah, but you see, again, unfortunately, without being able to kind of, properly legislate for it and to properly control it, it'll be chaos, won't it? I mean, that's why we can't
Absolutely.
Allow it to happen.
It's absolutely, and that's exactly where the situation where we are now, because the drones are getting bigger, people are getting more used to them, their flying time. I mean, let me give you the example that I consider, and this was 15 years ago. I was doing counterterrorism security for the government, for policing, and we were seriously concerned about drones that could be sent up with explosives on board, which could then fly around and effectively be programmed to land at a certain point at a certain time, and of course then detonate. And that was 10, 15 years ago, and things will have got a lot worse. The payloads will have got a lot bigger. And of course, the person that actually set this thing up on a trajectory could actually then drive and be thousands of miles away by the time the drone landed. So these things are really a big threat to us. But also they're a benefit, and we've got to look at that as well.
Well, sure. What about the 67 sightings that we had of various drones? I've got Global has tweeted me. He says, I've heard the initial sighting was indeed a private drone, which subsequently flew off and didn't return. All the rest were police drones, but spotters weren't aware they'd been deployed. I mean, he doesn't know any more than I do, so he's just making that up as he goes along. But the bottom line is, what about these 67 people who all reported seeing a drone?
Well, one drone could be seen by a lot of people, can it? And this is the key point, I think, because I do know that the police in Gatwick have got a drone. That could have been spotted. Who would know which, a good drone against a bad drone? And that's the key point. If you haven't got the kit, if you've not got the, effectively, and I'll call it a radar, if you like, but some form of a radar where you're picking up which drone is which and where it is and how it's acting, if you can't come back with the information on that, then you don't know. And it all comes down to people on the ground all seeing things from different angles and not actually being able to work out exactly what's going on.
No, of course. Listen, Chris, thanks very much indeed. As ever, Chris Phillips, Security Specialist, Managing Director of IPSO as well. Daniel is in Epsom. Hello, Daniel.
What's happening, Mike?
Yeah, not much, man. What's happening with you?
I'm out selling windows and doors all over Surrey and London.
Oh, OK, good. Well, let's hope that you don't get caught up in any fake traffic jams created by the government.
Well, the thing is, Mike, I know someone who works at Gavik who said there was never a drone.
Really?
And in actual fact, he thinks that there was something on their radar and near the runway, near the flight zone for about nearly 2 days.
Right.
And it was basically unidentified, and they didn't know what it was, and it was hovering there for nearly 2 days. If you go online, there's quite a few pictures of this object, whatever it was,
right,
near the run, hovering. So, you know, there was, and what do we know so far? We know there was never a drone.
Right.
Right.
Well, we don't know that, but we suspect there was never a drone.
So there was never a drone. They had to close the airport for 2 days.
Right.
And something was on the radar near the flight.
Was the something hovering then? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, so something was hovering near the runway for quite some time, for nearly 2 days, I believe.
Well, what do you think? So, if it's not a drone, then what was it then?
Well, this is it. No, this is the thing. If you go online, there's quite a few pictures of the thing not too far from the runway.
Well, so, what does it look like, though?
Well, it looks like a flying saucer, I guess. It looks
like a drone.
Well, it looks a lot more like a, yeah, like a, I guess, like an ellipse.
Like a drone.
Well, it looks nothing like a drone, to be fair. But,
okay.
I mean, if you have an airport down for 2 days, and let's say it was a UFO, you're not going to come out on the news and go, by the way, guys, it's a UFO, are you?
I presume it wasn't the kind of UFO we saw in Independence Day, like the giant one.
It was probably a UFO like which landed at Rendlesham Forest in 1982. I went on holiday to... It's the most witnessed UFO event in history.
Uh-huh.
And it happened in Suffolk at Rendlesham Forest in 1982. I went on holiday to Mexico and then I had a good time over there.
Yeah.
And it just so happened I bumped into a guy that works for NASA who teaches astronauts how to land shuttles. And he was stationed on that airbase in 1982. And a myriad of people saw this object. I mean, it's not... You know, I mean, there's something on Netflix called... Watch it on Netflix. It's called Unacknowledged. And they interview pilots, MDs,
The problem I have with all this UFO spotting, Daniel, is that we now live in an age when everything is photographed. I mean, you know, poor old Wayne Rooney gets photographed when he gets arrested in America. You know, Dele Alli gets photographed checking into the lobby of a hotel, you know, videoed. We now have we've never had any really decent pictures of a UFO ever.
Yeah, but there's a reason for that. It's a bit like when David Attenborough is visiting a termite mound. The termites don't know he's there, but he is. But he's a much more sophisticated animal than they are. And so to crack interstellar space travel, you'd need to have another 100 million years worth of evolution.
Well, you just have to have a decent camera to take a picture of something that's come down to Earth.
Well, yeah, but there are lots of sites. I mean, if you...
Yeah, I know there's loads of sites, Daniel, but the pictures are always rubbish.
Well, the pictures are always of something moving at great speed, but I mean, I'm sure the powers that be have got clearer images. I mean, in 1976, when they landed on the moon, there was apparently life already there. There was someone there to meet them. Buzz Aldrin himself on YouTube. If you go onto YouTube, Buzz Aldrin says,
"Don't tell me go to YouTube for God's sake."
Yeah, but a bell-shaped craft followed Apollo 11 to the moon. So, you know, and Buzz Aldrin says that.
Yeah, well, Buzz Aldrin's been followed around by a lot of people in his time. And, you know, he himself admitted that after his trip to the moon, he didn't feel terribly well. But, you know, I've heard all these stories before, Daniel. I know all about them. I've done radio shows about them. I've spoken to people who claim to have seen all sorts of stuff. But it's never, ever really provable. That's my point.
Yeah, but I think if it was... You know, it's a bit like these giant skeletons they find on the Earth that were at the Smithsonian Museum. You know, the apparent Nephilim. Where are they all? Where are all the skeletons gone now? You know, why don't they want us to know? Because if you watch Unacknowledged on Netflix, it's people want power. And as soon as the information is released, imagine if tomorrow, right, we could find an energy source that was abundant and never ran out. What would happen to our sort of, or all the biggest oil companies and energy companies? They'd go under. You know,
you spend a lot of time thinking about this stuff, Daniel.
I do, because I think it's really important. I think it's.
I don't think so.
I think it's the biggest topic, really.
It's a bit more interesting than Brexit, to be fair. But listen, I've got to go. Daniel, I appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure. Daniel's one of those guys that thinks that there's something out there, but he doesn't know what it is.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
It's the final countdown.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. You know what to do, 03444991000. It may or may not, of course, be the final countdown. It may be the final countdown but one. It may be the final countdown before the real final countdown. It may, in fact, not be a countdown at all. We will find out, hopefully, this afternoon, whether next Tuesday is indeed the day that there will be a meaningful vote. But the thing that seems to be occupying most people's attention at the moment in the world of politics and the world of Westminster is all the barracking that went on yesterday of Anna Soubry, of Kay Burley, of Femi, our good friend, of course, who occasionally comes on to Talk Radio to discuss the benefits of staying in the European Union. Let's talk to John Craig, police political correspondent for Sky News, who spends an awful lot of time down on College Green and outside the Houses of Parliament. John, a very good morning to you.
Hello, yes, I was there between 2 and 5 with Kay and then between 5 and 7 with Mark Austin.
Yeah.
And I think, well, we've had plenty of abuse in the weeks before Christmas, but what was the worst thing about yesterday was, as you've mentioned, when Anna Soubry had done, and she did an interview with Sky News, with Kay,
yeah.
A lot of abuse during that. She did one with Simon McCoy of the BBC as well. She was called a Nazi during that. But when it turned really ugly was when she left a reasonably secure area on the green,
yeah.
To walk back to the Houses of Parliament. She was pursued. I mean, I described it last night as a gauntlet of hate.
Yes.
Between the green and one of the entrances to the Houses of Parliament, and that was quite unpleasant.
Yes, no, it was. And I mean, clearly, people have pointed out over time in the last sort of 12 hours or so that yes, politicians should expect to be barracked. Yes, they should expect to be shouted at, particularly if they've done what some believe Anna Soubry has done, which is to betray her constituents. That's an argument for another time, I suppose. But what I think is unacceptable, and as I'm sure you do, John, is this kind of physical intimidation of what, you know, of kind of pressing into people, shouting in their faces, you know, doing something which effectively, if you did it in any other circumstance, you'd probably be arrested.
Yes. What happened yesterday was intimidation, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
The other person who's been targeted is Owen Jones,
yeah.
A left-wing writer who has suffered a lot of homophobic taunts and chants,
right.
As well.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, there were complaints inside the chamber yesterday from a few MPs. One was Steve Doughty, a Labour MP from Cardiff. Nick Bowles, a Tory, raised it with the Speaker.
Uh-huh.
And as you probably know, some MPs have now written to the Met Commissioner,
yeah.
Cressida Dick,
right.
Saying, come on. I mean, what has worried a lot of us, I mean, we've been broadcasting from the Green, and the Sky Box, we're right next to the road, so we get the worst of it.
Yes.
And whereas the BBC are slightly further away from the road.
Is there no way you could sort of cover that up, as it were, so that it'd be more soundproof?
I think we're going to do that, yes. But what has concerned some of us is that the inaction of the police.
Yeah.
Shouting, heckling, it's all part of politics, really.
Yeah.
And politicians can live with that. But I think what overstepped the mark yesterday was the intimidation that Anna Soubry got as she walked back, or tried to walk back, to Parliament. Now, what's interesting is that we know that some of these people are from the English Defence League. And in fact, one of the people who was in the middle of the group yesterday, my colleague Jason Farrell from Sky News, has identified him as one of the people who took part in a rather ugly demo in Sunderland a few months ago. And he featured in Jason's report.
Is this the guy that's been posting stuff on his Facebook page as well?
Yeah,
right. Well, this is what I was going to ask you, because I was down in Westminster for pretty much the 2 weeks just before Christmas break.
I saw the Talk Radio tent.
Well, you can't miss it. You know, it's the most fabulous looking tent you've ever seen. It's red, it's black, you know, everything's going on there. And of course, and I'm in it, so of course you want to pop in the next time we're down there. But the thing is, these guys weren't there then, so they're relatively newcomers to this arena, aren't they?
Well, I think when you say they weren't there then, they were there in the week or so in the run-up to Christmas, yes.
But I didn't see them.
I think it was far worse than what we saw before Christmas.
Right.
I mean, as I say, the big difference was the intimidation of politicians, and Anna Soubry in particular, on their walking between the Green and Parliament. Now, what's the problem is, and no doubt they'll be delighted about this, is, of course, MPs will be reluctant to leave Parliament to go and do interviews on the Green, because they won't want to face all that.
No, of course. But the police presumably will be under some pressure now. And I don't know whether you're down there today or whether you've seen these characters, but the police will be under some kind of pressure to do a better job, won't they?
Well, they are indeed. They're under pressure from, I think, both the BBC and Sky News have spoken to the police. And what happened yesterday, which hasn't happened until yesterday, was that in the chamber it was raised by some MPs. I say Steve Doughty, Labour MP from Cardiff, he's a Remainer. He raised it with Stephen Barclay, the Brexit Secretary. And Stephen Barclay, in his response, actually referred to that there's a plaque on the wall in the chamber in memory of Joe Cox, the Labour MP for Batley and Spen, who, of course, was murdered just a week before the referendum in 2016. Then Nick Bowles, a Conservative, raised it with the Speaker. And the Speaker, well, I don't know whether the Speaker has been in touch with the Metropolitan Police, but certainly a lot of Labour MPs have written to the Met, to Cressida Dick, saying, come on, this is not acceptable. And the letter talks about how the Met are well aware of who some of these, what the MPs call far-right and extreme-right activists, who they are. But we have grown frustrated. We, Sky News, have grown frustrated. We've seen little or no police intervention, you know, not even just saying to them, calm down, you know, anything like that. You know, I mean, they're used to dealing with football crowds and so on.
Sure.
And, you know, with a bit of sort of sensible policing, you don't have to arrest everybody. You can just ask them to calm down.
Exactly, it's just even getting in the way. I mean, Press Association just breaking news at the moment, John, saying that the police officers on duty near Parliament have been briefed, in quotes, to intervene appropriately where they hear or see breaches of the law, after Tory MP Anna Soubry accused them of ignoring the abuse hurled at politicians and journalists. So,
the breaches of the law, of course, will be what you might call racist abuse.
Yeah.
I mean, we, as well as the homophobic verbal attacks on Owen Jones, I mean, our political editor, Faisal Islam, has had some horrible racist abuse.
Yes, I've seen that
been
as well, yeah.
Standing alongside Kay Burley and Mark Austin.
Yeah, shocking stuff. John, listen, we're going to let you go. Thanks very much indeed. John Craig there reporting in from Westminster, where the police have now been told that they have to sort something out. This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, 03444991000. Monsieur Moi in France doesn't like women over 50. I've got plenty of tweets to tell him that he's completely and utterly wrong. Keep those coming at Talk Radio, please, and I shall continue to read them out. One from Linda says, well, I'm 57 and my husband, who is 11 years younger than me, would heartily disagree with this man. This guy needs to catch on. He's getting on a bit and has that slightly unwashed look that French men have sometimes. So I'm quite glad to be off his radar. Let's talk to Peter, who's in Folkestone. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Mike. I just realised maybe Mr. Wise having a pop at Macron.
Yeah, maybe. But I think he's a bit too self-centred to be having a pop at anybody other than promoting his own book, to be honest.
Yeah, maybe it's a backhanded attempt to join the yellow vest.
Yeah, could be. You never know. What are you going to tell us today, Peter?
So I'm calling, Mike, to say that for the first time in the best part of a year, I'm going to disagree with you.
Okay.
Because I believe that the treatment that Anna Soubry and Owen Jones have got, and I've seen both of those videos, in none of those videos that I have seen was Owen Jones abused with any sort of gay slurs or anything like that. Nothing I heard. But, you know,
no, but he has been in the past. I've seen it, and it's been on TV before.
Sure. On both occasions, I think that they're kind of, when they've been actively followed in the street,
yeah,
and filmed and been followed in the street, they've both been called traitors. Mm. And Anna Soubry yesterday took extreme objection to the word traitor being used with her, in addition to a swear word that preceded it.
Yeah. She also took exception to being called a Nazi, I think.
Well, yeah, indeed, she took exception to that one as well. The first one was traitor. I would point out to Mrs. Soubry that she is an MP. When she joined the Parliament, she took an oath of allegiance to the Crown, to support the Crown in her duties as an MP. And normally, constitutionally, the power of the Crown is held in Parliament. So when Parliament says we're going to do Brexit, and she stands up and says, oh, no, that's a bad idea, we shouldn't do it, and then goes about trying not to do it, you could argue, might be a bit of a logic stretch, but technically, that is either sedition or mutiny or, you know, the act of somebody that is betraying the oath that they have given.
Except that you could argue the opposite as well, because, in fact, it's not necessarily Parliament that is doing Brexit, as you put it. It's the government that is doing Brexit, right? The government is basically carrying out the will of the people, because the people were offered a referendum, regardless of whether people say that it's not a binding referendum. They voted in that referendum to leave the European Union. But she's also doing her job, if she wishes to do it this way, by disagreeing with that and saying that she has a different view, and the electorate have the right to then react to that, if you like.
I think what you've said, Mike, is absolutely perfectly correct.
Yeah.
And so this kind of goes to the nub of this issue, which is, when does a political discussion become an offensive conversation?
Well, I think it's very clear when it does so, and it did that yesterday, when you've got these snarling kind of characters who are clearly not interested really in political discussion. They're interested in abuse, they're interested in shouting, they're interested in intimidating people and physically kind of confronting them. That, to me, is not political discourse, I'm afraid.
Right, so, the unfortunate thing is that there is no law and there is no legal set of behaviours that, you know, for example, I'm not trying to draw equivalents here, it sounds like I am, but there's this practice of deplatforming people,
yeah,
a lot of conservative viewpoints in the United States and Australia, and in the UK are being actively targeted by groups to prevent the speech at all. Not to disagree with the points of the speech, but to prevent it from happening. And this practice is growing further and further and further.
It is. And I mean, certainly there are those who believe, and I think Anna Soubry has said this herself, who believe that this direct sort of action that these guys are taking is specifically designed to intimidate MPs and politicians from coming out and speaking to the media, because they have to then cross the road. And I don't know how familiar you are with Parliament Square, but they have to basically walk across to College Green and run past these people who are going to be giving them a hard time. Now, a lot of MPs will now decide they don't want to risk that, because they don't. It's not a very pleasant experience.
Unfortunately, it is a public place, and if MPs wish to conduct interviews in a public place, then they have to accept that the public may very well be between them and their
No, of course, of course. But I don't think anyone would object. I mean, to be fair to Anna Soubry, and I'm not particularly keen on the way that she has conducted herself as far as some of the things that she said and some of the ways that she's, reacted to things. However, you know, she hasn't objected to people calling her name. She hasn't objected to people, you know, being abusive towards her. But what she has objected to is this kind of roughing up that she received yesterday. And it was a roughing up. Whether she was actually physically assaulted or not is not the point. She was roughed up by these yobbos. And that's what they are.
the videos are not very, very generous to the people that were trying to involve her in the discussion. They were loud. They were aggressive. You know, and what you could. I think a lot of this is because there's such a gap between the public and the politicians.
Yes, no, I accept all of that, but it still doesn't excuse what they did, Peter. And that is my I'd say I know where the line is. You can disagree with me, but I think you'd be wrong. And I think everybody knows where that line is, and they crossed it.
I think the situation, and I disagree with what was done. I disagree with the manner in which it was done.
Yeah.
The problem is that I believe the situation and the circumstances now are driving people to extremes.
Yeah, but that doesn't make it right, does it?
There is no middle ground. Regardless of whether it's right, wrong or sideways, if people view it from whichever side of the fence, left or right, if people view that as the only way of getting something across, then, to be honest, Ms. Soubry and all the other MPs are at risk. Jacob Rees-Mogg...
Yeah, but you agree with me, Peter, that it was wrong.
But the problem statement is it's not up to the public to find mechanisms that suit MPs' sensibilities. MPs must be in touch with population.
But there's there's no need for that kind of behaviour, Peter. I've got to let you go because we're out of time, but thank you. In fact, you do agree with me. So when you say you're ringing up to disagree with me, you don't disagree with me, you agree with me, which is no surprise to me whatsoever. A rather interesting story in some of the papers this morning where researchers are close to producing a genetically modified spicy tomato. Now, imagine going down to the supermarket and saying, well, I must make some chilli tonight, so I'm just going to buy, instead of some chillies and some tomatoes, I'm just going to buy some spicy tomatoes. Tim, what's it all about? Very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Yeah, as you said, researchers have said they haven't actually managed to make this new tomato yet, but they've published a scientific journal article which says they think they're close to figuring out how to do the genetic modifications to combine the chilliness of chili peppers inside our regular tomatoes.
I mean, I suppose this has all sorts of ramifications for the vegetable world, doesn't it? Because presumably, if you look down your sort of tinned tomatoes aisle in the supermarket, you can get all sorts of passata that's got, you know, basil in it, or passata with mixed herbs or oregano or something. You can presumably grow a tomato that was mixed up with some oregano as well.
Yeah, I mean, I have to be honest with you, I'm not a genetic expert myself, but the interesting thing about it is that actually they're not actually trying to do this to help those chefs in the kitchen trying to make a nice chili or whatever. They're actually doing this because the things that make spice, these substances called capsaicinoids, are actually really useful for business. And so they're using things like antibiotics and painkillers and pepper spray.
Right.
And the idea is if you can grow them in tomatoes, you can mass produce tomatoes really easily and then get the spiciness out and put it into other kind of chemicals. And the fact they might be appearing in the aisles is kind of a helpful side effect, really.
Oh, OK. So, I mean, they've been doing this operation over in Brazil, I believe. So, I mean, how soon do you think before we'll find out what, you know, whether they can actually physically produce one of these things?
Well, it's hard to say. The scientists in Brazil said that what they found out is that tomatoes and chili peppers have a common ancestor, and so the tomato has some of the genes needed to make the spiciness, but they're not exactly sure how to turn on these genes. So what they're currently doing is they're kind of doing a bit of trial and error, where they're going through various different methods to try and switch on the genes to grow tomatoes that have chili. But, I mean, how long that takes, it's hard to say. I mean, they're just kind of going through one by one these various things inside the genetic code of the tomato.
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully soon, let's say.
I mean, I think I'm right in saying that I've seen a few kind of merged vegetables over time. Like, I think there's something that you can get that's sort of cross between a potato and a leek or something. I think I'm right in saying, I can't remember what it is, but I remember seeing it in a shop and thinking that's unusual. But there's obviously a kind of an appetite for this kind of thing. If nothing else, just from the foodie brigade, because they all love something new and fanciful, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, do you remember that fad a few years ago about the cronut, where someone managed to combine a croissant
that's
and a
right.
donut?
Yes, that's
you know,
right.
People
that's
go
what
crazy
it
for this kind
I
of
love
stuff.
It, yeah.
And, yeah. But, I mean, of course, in Europe, there are sometimes concerns. People have worries about genetically modified food, but every time the scientists have kind of looked into this, they haven't been able to find any signs that it's actually bad for us to eat these kind of new foods, even though people give them kind of scare labels like Frankenfoods and that kind of thing. But the research shows that actually they're perfectly safe to eat.
Sure. Funnily enough, that whole genetically modified food debate seems to have disappeared, doesn't it? Because there was a time when there was a genetically modified, I think, corn being grown or something in this country, and the Americans were certainly doing quite a lot of it. But you don't really hear anybody talking about it anymore.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of scaremongering, a lot of fear, as there often is when something new turns up. But I think what's happened in recent years is that there's been a lot of research into the potential health benefits or downsides, and the research has said, you know what, eating a chili tomato that has never existed in the wild is going to do no more harm to you than eating an ordinary tomato that we've had for thousands of years.
Right.
You know, scientists aren't creating these kind of spooky frankenfoods. They're just tweaking a few genes at the thing to produce, you know, things that we're very familiar with. You know, everyone's eating chili peppers before, they don't kill you unless you have, obviously, one that's too spicy for your taste.
Yeah, well, you certainly have to watch out for the old habaneros and all those kinds of
things.
But certainly the piece in the mail today, they don't even seem sure what to call this. They don't know whether it should be called a chili mato, which I prefer, or a tomilli. Tomilli's a really bad one, I think.
Yeah, I think chili mato has got much more legs to that, but we'll have to see what the branders and the advertisers come up with when these eventually arrive on our shelves.
Yeah, no,
hold
absolutely.
Your breath for that one.
I think so. Thank you very much indeed. Tim White, a journalist there, talking about the chili mato, which is not actually on our shelves yet, but may well be soon, which is a tomato with a spicy kick to it because it's genetically mixed up with a chili. I think there's all sorts of possibilities for this, and I think it's probably a good thing.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio, via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.